It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
The deepest thinker running for president in 2024. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcasts. It's not always an asset to be a deep thinker. It's definitely not always an asset to tell the truth. That's why politics is full of liars. It's best to give the people what they want. At least, that's the historical playbook. It's not the playbook for the man who joins me today. Vivek Ramaswamy, who has been a guest here on the Will Cain Podcast on numerous occasions, is running for president. Currently, he's polling about 2% among Republican voters. But it is climbing. And maybe it's because Vivek Ramaswamy is willing to tell the truth, willing to think deeply. He's taken some what on the surface would be very unpopular opinions, including, at least as the headline screams, taking away the right to vote for anyone under the age of 25. I got a chance, though, to talk to Vivek about that idea and many more. And what I think you will see is he taps into a theme we've talked about together right here, and that is the idea of civic engagement, of skin in the game, of investment and understanding of the United States of America. It may not be popular, but it is a big idea. Vivek is full of big ideas, and it's my impression, my interpretation, that he's simply trying to get to the truth. We will soon find out whether or not that is of interest to the people of America. Here, I think you will enjoy for the next half hour a conversation on someone running for president. Here is a conversation with Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek Ramaswamy. All right, man, it's always good to see you. I'm so happy to talk to you again. So you don't want 23-year-olds to vote. You say you want to tear apart permanent Washington. Do you really want to be president?
Yeah. So I gotta take issue with that first one. I okay. want them to vote, my man. I do. That's the whole point. And I want Washington to go back to being what George Washington and the founding fathers envisioned it to be, which is three branches of government, not four. So I'm for these things, but I have a very different path to getting there than the path that led us to where we are right now, which is young people telling, you probably saw this story, now saying that they would rather hold on to TikTok than their right to vote. A majority of young people in a survey literally just said that's what they would prefer. They would keep hold on to their social media accounts and TikTok sooner than their right to vote. The Constitution has three branches of government, not four. So I want to see these things restored: civic duty, civic pride, constitutional republic. But whatever we're doing ain't getting us there. And so I think we're gonna have to think about it very differently. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Hey, man, we share that concern and we share that desire to see some level of civic engagement, some skin in the game when it comes to America. I don't know that you and I have had this conversation in the past, but I'll tell you, Vivek, I've had somewhat of an evolution on my, for example, approach to the idea of a military draft. I would have been very opposed to that in the past. But I look at some of these countries where young men are forced to serve for some period of time. And one of the things I think at least breeds is this idea that you have some investment in the outcome of the country, that you're tied to that. I'm just curious, like, where would you be on that? Forced service, maybe from the age of 18 to 21, whatever it may be, but just the concept of some civil service, military service, some requirement that young people give something of their life to this country.
So I talked about this in my first book, Will, and Woke Inc., and I didn't come out strongly in favor of it, but I was sort of where you are on the issue, which is to say that I think there's something to it. And in Singapore and in South Korea and in Israel, this model works. I think there's something about it in the American context that makes that not quite the right solution, but it gives us the idea for what the path is to the right solution. The reason I think it's not the right solution in America is, at least the way we're wired, is just by forcing us to do something, we don't fall in love with that thing. Okay. So like the analogy I would give you is, you know, my parents, right, grew up in India. They had an arranged marriage. They grew to love each other. All right. And that's the arranged marriage model, is that you learn to love later. That's not the American way. There's just something about our culture woven into who we are, even though that can be the culture in India. Just as in South Korea, you may not be born with civic pride, but you better learn to love it if you're a man, because you're going to serve or else they're going to put you in prison. I think there's something to it. But in the American context, Will, here's how I see it, is that we have privileges and immunities of citizenship. The 14th Amendment enumerates both of those. Okay. I think that tying duty to the privileges of citizenship is a promising American way to do this. So if we have a broader conversation, take the idea I proposed last week, but let's just take it broader and not make it an age-based thing, to say that in order to fully enjoy the privileges of citizenship, you ought to have served the country. And what's the ultimate privilege of citizenship? Voting, determining who the leaders are. Then you're not talking about putting somebody in jail. Right. Then you're not talking about an infringement of liberty in a way that I think concerns the American intuition, even mine a little bit. But we still capture the thing that I think you and I care about, which is the revival of civic duty, to say the immunities of citizenship. The government can't knock on your door and ask to see your house without a warrant. That's an immunity. Can't muzzle you from speaking. But the privileges, look, notably, voting is not guaranteed in the Constitution. Read the entire Constitution front to back. Our founding fathers and everybody who wrote every amendment since, they knew what they were doing. They said you can't restrict the vote based on certain criteria, but there's no expressly constitutionally guaranteed right to vote, because we don't live in a direct democracy. We live in a constitutional republic. And that means something. It comes with civic duties. So against that backdrop, tying the privileges of citizenship to duties, I think that's closer to the flame of the American way. And that, in a small, very pragmatic way, if I may say so myself, but I think that in an implementable way, is what I took a first step towards last week when I said that if you want to vote in this country before the age of 25, let's start with that. Before the age of 25, then you at least have to either have served the country, or at minimum, serve the country by learning something about it and pass the same civics test that we require of naturalized citizens. So you and I are on the same wavelength here, Will. I just think we have to think outside the usual partisan boxes to get there.
You know, I give you a hard time, Vivek, but I don't hate the proposal. It's a carrot instead of a stick in terms of drawing people to civic engagement. You know, I would push back on one thing, and this, I don't know how concerned I should be, Vivek, that young people would sooner give up their right to vote than they would give up TikTok. Because I do think if you ran some kind of poll for the American population at large, you'd be disappointed in some of the outcomes, regardless of age demographics. If you asked, I don't know, I'm just going to hypothetically make something up. You know, people my age, you know, would you rather give up a weekly alcoholic beverage or have your right to vote? We might be disappointed in the outcome of some of those poll results. So for young people, it just happens to be TikTok. I'm not sure that's unique to them, is my point on how near and dear they hold that right to vote versus the alternative. But what I do think you're getting at, what I do like this idea of, is, hey, you can avail yourselves of privileges that would manifest by the age of 25 if you understand the country or invest in the country. Because what we're really getting at here is not age. What we're getting at here is understanding of the country. What I think you're asking people to do is to understand America, either by sacrificing to her some of your time, or understanding who she is in a historical and philosophical context. And the truth is, Vivek, I'm not sure that's— I'm just thinking abstractly with you here. We're not formulating law. I'm not sure what changes at the age of 25. I would like to see the entire citizenry more educated and more invested in America.
So I'm with you, Will. I really am, actually. That's where I am in spirit. So now, this is actually the first conversation I'm having since I've rolled the policy idea out that gets into the depth of my journey to get there. It just turns out pragmatic. So I'm actually with you. I'll say two things in response. Against the backdrop of agreement. One is, I'm actually giving people three paths to understand the country. One is serve the country, military or first responder police service. If not, at least learn something about the country in the form of the same civics test that immigrants have to pass to become naturalized voting citizens. And if not, then at least live in the country as an adult for 7 years and experience it, likely as a taxpayer or finding your own way. to actually at least have some skin in the game as an adult in the country. So those are three different paths to experience or know something, come to know something about the country. Now, the reason also there's a second pragmatic reason why I first framed it this way is I don't think we can possibly be in the position of taking away the vote of somebody who voted last year or was eligible to vote last year but isn't this year. But what I'm starting is effectively getting to the same place fresh with the new generation where a 17-year-old couldn't vote last year anyway. We've already accepted that, that he can drive a car at 16, but you're not old enough to vote. Well, let's at least start with that in the sense that we're not taking away something that he was already doing. But to say to vest into it fully, you have to either have served the country or pass the civics test or wait to at least have 7 years of adult experience before you vote. So
I see.
I think that's the logic. But the intuition is actually really the same. One of the things I find when you're sort of proposing something that has depth and nuance, at least, I mean, years at least for me of thought that have gone into this, and Woke Inc. talks about it. I evolved it a little further in Nation of Victims, but now I think it's ready for presidential platform policy readiness. Is that still when you roll it out, it's like, you know, the headline, there's only so much space for a headline. It's Vivek Ramaswamy wants to raise voting age to 25. And I don't object to that. I mean, that's part of what I said. So you got to be able to willing to own it, but it misses the essence of what it was actually about, which is the revival of civic duty, tie the duties of citizenship to the privileges of citizenship, do it in a way that can be pragmatically implementable, which isn't rolling something back that a 40-year-old's been doing for the last 22 years and say, oh no, something's changed, but start fresh with the next generation where you're not taking away something that someone already had, literally. So those are some of the factors that kind of scratch beneath the surface a little bit.
And with that, I understand how you arrived at the age of 25, 7 years of investment in this country, which would apply to any adult.
And I have one more thing there, Will, actually, is arriving at the age of 25 is I want to make as minimal changes to the status quo as possible. One of those minimal changes is, first of all, we said the same civics test that an immigrant has to pass. So we're not making up some new test. But the second thing is all adult men, and I'm sure you and I both did it, you know, because it's on pain of criminal penalties. To have to register if you're a man in the U.S. in selective service by the age of 25 right. already. So that's already the 18 to 25 ban. People go through the motions and go to the BMV and not know what they're doing. That's what they're doing, is they're signing up for selective service. You have to by the age of 25 anyway. And so that created a natural connectivity to something that we already ask people to do.
We're going
to
step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
So I asked you about permanent Washington as well. Let's spend a moment on that. You know, I think the theme of your and my conversation today, it's the theme of the relationship that we've built together so far, is I think that, man, obviously you're incredibly smart, and that's almost a throwaway comment. You show a level of wisdom that is uncommon and that is important, and you're a person of big ideas. The question is, when you are seeking to be a politician, have you actually entered the arena of big ideas? Can you do the things that you talk about doing? You know, this week we had the Durham report. We have talked together about the rot, the corruption, that not just exists in permanent Washington, but that exists across corporate America as well. And I just wonder, which you've written extensively about in Woke Inc. I just wonder, Vivek, you know, in order to really remedy this situation, let's just say you were president of the United States, you would have to take drastic actions. I mean, they would be massively, to put it in the business world in a complimentary term, disruptive. To put it in the political terms, they would be revolutionary, Vivek. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really, truly would. Because you'd be talking about cutting the federal bureaucracy down a lot of fat, maybe even a lot of muscle, to get back to a place where we were not corrupt. Is it just big ideas, Vivek? Can you actually do any of this?
So I think so, Will. I mean, I can't promise you till we get there and do it. I think I'm the last best chance of actually getting it done this cycle, and that's why I'm in this race. I didn't imagine I was going to be running for president. I do think we live in a moment where it's going to take the combination of somebody who has vision but also can execute and see that through. And one without the other isn't going to be sufficient. I think that part of what limited Trump was that he was operating – principally based on vengeance and grievance. And that's not, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think there was a time and place for recognizing the grievances of Americans that were previously unrecognized, but that limits how far you can go. I think Reagan went further than Trump. And I think the reason Reagan went further than Trump is that he did it based on first principles and moral authority with a moral mandate, two landslide elections to back him up. That allows you to go further. And so that's why I think the being completely unapologetic, being completely unshackled with respect to the vision. One of the things I'm not doing this campaign is it's against all political advice that I'm offering the unvarnished version of my actual vision here because they say it's not practical. You're going to lose this part of the coalition. No, I'm not. The old Thomas Sowell saying is if you care about somebody, you tell them the truth. If you care about yourself, you tell them what they want to hear. I'm giving them the truth. And I'm betting without any evidence to back it up that will be the winning electoral strategy. I think it will be. But I have no evidence to prove that to you. It's just my gut that tells me that is what, from traveling this country, that is what people are hungry for. But then if we win, I think it's not going to be by a small margin. I think it's going to be in a landslide election because I don't spend a lot of time talking about Republicans and Democrats. I think we live in a 1776 moment. You use the word revolution. I say this on the campaign trail all the time. Two Republican audiences. It's not about Republicans and Democrats. It's about the Great Reset versus the Great Uprising, which is a 1776 question of whether citizens of this nation can be trusted to self-govern in a three-branch constitutional republic. And I think that if we get in there, then if I'm going to win, it's going to be by a landslide in the general election. It's going to be a moral mandate. And then I think that that's our last best shot to actually do the thing and actually use the sheer principled footing, the moral foundation, the vision that guides us, the thing that we're not running from but running to, that will absolutely get us there. And yes, probably have less than 25% of the employees of the federal government still left in the federal government by the time I'm done with it. But it's not because it's vengeance with respect to that deep state. It's because I'm guided by this thing called the Constitution that says that that branch of government, the fourth, should have never existed in the first place. And I think when you're operating on that kind of moral foundation, you got that freight train. If we're able to get it out of the barn, that's what the primary process is all about. I don't think anything's going to stop us. And I think that having that level of uncompromising vision is part of what will actually get us there. We're not going to get to national unity through compromise. That train is long gone. I think the one we have left is the one that gets there by being uncompromising about the actual principles that define what it means to be an American today. And you know what? I think if people are interested in the other thing, sort of compromise, let's have a boring, and some people want this, right? I you know, empathize with it to some extent. We want a boring politics. We don't want just don't bring the drama, you know, keep things boring. Let's get back to where we were in the 2000s. Let's get back to Bush era conservatism, and not only Bush era conservatism, but even a tone of politics that involves compromising as a way of just getting things done. These are things that people say, and I'm not saying it disparagingly. I'm trying to give the best account of it. I'm not that person. Like, you should go for someone else. I there's others to choose from. Pick one of them. I think if you want an actual, to borrow your word, revolutionary revival of what it means to be American, of self-governance in our country, of civic pride and civic duty that we bequeath to the next generation of Americans, that's what was missing. And that's why I'm in the race. And to represent that as the youngest person ever to do this, you know, I'm the first millennial ever to run for the GOP candidacy for president. It's kind of my responsibility to bring that for the next generation. That's the way I see it.
So Vivek, I believe your words. And if the vast majority of the American public shared my belief in your words and gave you that moral majority, gave you that mandate and elected you against all odds, we can both recognize the reality of the odds, against all odds into the office as president of the United States. Let's stick with this idea of practicality for just one moment. Having witnessed what has happened to Donald Trump over the past 7-8 years, and I had a conversation with my friend and co-host Pete Hegseth about this, Vivek, some months ago, in talking about the resistance within that concept of permanent Washington to anyone that seeks to change its status. Would it turn its weaponry on, for example, Ron DeSantis? And I think that we are already beginning to see the answer to that question is yes. So in other words, it wasn't unique to Donald Trump. Wouldn't you, even with that mandate, face that same resistance? And what we're talking about is investigations, indictments, the security state, the intelligence apparatus. If you intend to cut the federal government down to more than cut 75% off of its weight, you are going to be met with every level of corruption that has ever existed in the pursuit of self-preservation, right? Every corruption that has ever existed within the weight of the United States government coming against you, Vivek Ramaswamy.
So I think that that's what anybody who's seeking this job has to be ready for. If you're taking it on with the seriousness that I am, that Trump attempted to, I think it's part of what makes this a sacrifice, right? You have to be willing to go in eyes wide open. And look, I think it's part of the reason why Trump isn't even the same person today that he was 8 years ago, right? You want to strike the swamp will strike back. You want to drain the swamp will drain you. And right now, I'm the guy who has fresh legs, right? I'm coming in as the new outsider, unencumbered, ready to get this done. 8 years from now, I won't be the same person I am today, just as Donald Trump isn't the same person he was 8 years ago, because we're human. But each of us has a role to play in driving that revival, or else it isn't going to happen. And the part I can take as a learning from that Trump experience is that they came for him. They'll come for me. But I'm not going to make it quite as easy for them as even Trump did. I think that's the lesson. We've got to be on irreproachable footing. They will still come. They'll make stuff up. I don't care. But the way, you know, I don't just preach about family values or belief in God or whatever. I'm not being, to borrow one of Trump's, I'm not being sanctimonious here, but I think that I just mean it. We live our lives according to the values that we preach. And I think that's the last best shot we can have to stand on solid moral footing. I am religious. I believe in God. I think that it's not being, you know, sometimes when you fall into the trap of believing that it is all being done by us, by me, that actually can be constraining. I think when you open up your eyes to the truth, which is that it's not being done by me, it is being done through me. It is not being done by us, it is being done through us. That's liberating. And I think that if you, and maybe that's a difference in not only style, but worldview between Donald Trump and me. I think Donald Trump believed it was done by him. And in some literal earthly sense, it was to some extent. But I think that in the true sense of actual sort of truth, like capital T truth here, it's being done through us. And I think that that's liberating. And so let them come and we'll see what happens, but we're guided by the truth.
And Vivek, what is the source of your faith? That,
you know, I don't know, Will. Life. It can't just all, like, this is not the aimless passage of time, right? There's more to this story, and maybe it's easy for me to come to it because we've been blessed with so much. I mean, the upbringing that I had with two parents in the house that put a focus on education and gave me, you know, not money, but the more important things, to be able to have the path and live the dream that I've enjoyed, the two children that we brought into this world, the miracle by which, especially our both sons, but our first son, I mean, it was a long story. I can tell you, you know, now or another, we're running out of time, but another time. I don't know. These things don't happen randomly. And so I think God has given my family and I a life that allows us to open our eyes and see the obvious, that it couldn't have been anything other than the blessing of a higher power that allows us to live the life that we do. But that goes for the struggles we've encountered too. It's just, I'm a scientist. There's plenty of room for, not only is there plenty of room for God in science, the beauty of the natural world that we describe as it exists could not, you know, Einstein couldn't explain it without resorting to faith either in his version of theories of relativity. Same goes for my version of the American life that I've experienced. I guess there's no other way to explain it. That's where I get my faith.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast. Let me ask you the cynical political question. I think that many are asking, so I have to ask the obvious, is I believe your message. I believe your intent, and I believe in its purity. But are you running for something besides president? You know, Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, I think together right now, poll somewhere north of 75%, meaning they're the far and away two front runners. Are you running for vice president? Are you running for a cabinet position? Are you running for something besides president?
The answer is no. And I can just answer that honestly. I don't mean to be selfish about this because I do care about serving the country, but I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I haven't reported to someone for a very long time. I don't intend to ever do that again in my life. It's not something you go into as an aspiration to do. And then that sounds a little selfish because but I'm just telling you kind of intuitively, that doesn't seem appealing to me as the way I can have maximal impact versus continuing to build businesses, write books, you know, what I've been doing over the last 3 years as a parent. That's a form of leadership too. There's a lot of ways to have a positive impact on a country. I'm in this race because I see an opportunity to do for this country what Reagan did in 1980, which is to lead us out of our national identity crisis to a revival that gives a sense of national character and spirit to that next generation. I'm in this race because I believe I wouldn't be in this race if I didn't believe I was the best person suited to do that for the next generation of Americans, which is the one I think we all care most about if we're to have a country left for more than just another generation. You know, on the polls of it, look, I'm not some political analyst, so you guys will have better people on your amongst your colleagues at Fox and elsewhere than I can offer you. But I can give you a fact, which is that I'm polling right now better than Donald Trump was in June of 2015 when he came down the escalator, when the same people would have said the same thing about him that somebody justifiably could say about me. We've gone from zero to tied in third place for several of the national polls in recent weeks in a matter of 10 weeks. Does that mean I'm going to succeed? No, it doesn't. I would rather speak truth at every step and lose this election than to compromise on what I say, even if that were the winning strategy. So I guess that's something I would tell you is that I'm running for truth. And if that means that I'm not going to win the election, I would still rather continue running for truth than to run to occupy the White House. But it's certainly not to occupy some cabinet position. You know, I don't want to say that I would prefer a sharp poke in the eye to that, because I really do want to have a maximal impact on the country in whatever way that is. So I promise you, whatever it is, I promise you we'll make whatever sacrifice need to do that. I just think for me, that would be probably through doing it through the private sector, continuing to do what I've been doing over the last several years than to, you know, be one of several employees, one of many employees in the federal government.
Look, we share that value. It's the one that I place at the top of my professional life, and that is the pursuit of truth. I think that I could talk to you, and I hope to talk to you at greater length many more times throughout this run for president. I think the American public has a lot more to learn, not just about your ideas, because we could spend an hour on your ideas, but also you as a man. And so I've appreciated this time today, Vivek, and I can't wait till we talk again next time.
I appreciate it, my man. Thank you.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Vivek Ramaswamy. You can check him out. He's all over social media. And you can leave a comment for this podcast at Apple or on social media. Leave us a 5-star review if you think it's so deserved. I will see you again next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, in these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.